headlines this hour. Iran's leader tells the visiting Turkish president that any military action in northern Syria will definitely harm Turkey, Syria, and the region, and will benefit terrorists. Iran and Turkey vow to expand bilateral trade and military ties as the two countries sign several cooperation agreements in Tehran. And the UN Special Committee slams what it calls the protracted occupation of Palestinian land by Israel and the regime's entrenched culture of impunity. Hello and welcome to This Is News. Thanks for joining us. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says that any military move on northern Syria would definitely harm Turkey, Syria, and the entire region. The leader says fighting terrorism is a must, but a military incursion in Syria will benefit terrorists. Ayatollah Khamenei also underlined the significance of Syria's territorial integrity. The leader said the problems in Syria should be resolved through negotiations. Ayatollah Khamenei made the comments in a meeting with the visiting Turkish president. Recep Tayyip Erdogan also said terrorist groups in Syria are supported by the Western countries, including the U.S., who are providing them with heavy weapons. The issue of Palestine was also raised during the meeting. Ayatollah Khamenei said that Israel is the main force driving a wedge among Muslim countries. He added that the U.S. and Israel cannot stop Palestinians' deep-rooted movement. The Turkish president has also met his Iranian counterpart, Ebrahim Raisi, and discussed a wide range of bilateral issues, including counterterrorism measures. In a joint presser after the meeting, Raisi stressed the need to combat terrorists operating under any title. He also censored the West's double standard on terrorism. While meeting with Erdogan, the Iranian president called for the need of bilateral cooperation on regional issues. Erdogan, for his part, underlined that combating terrorism is of paramount importance. Before the joint presser, officials of the two countries signed a number of cooperation agreements on expanding bilateral ties in various fields, including trade and security. Later in the day, Raisi and Erdogan are due to hold a summit on Syria with their Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. The talks will be within the framework of the Astana peace process, which was set up in 2017 in Kazakhstan. Iran's energy minister says the country is the leading power in West Asia in terms of electricity output production. Ali Akbar Mehrabian says developing what he called electricity diplomacy is high on the agenda of the government. Mehrabian says that Iran is now moving toward long-term strategic contracts in the field of electricity in the region. The minister added that one such agreement is the contract Iran recently signed with Iraq to construct power plants in the country. A report by the UN condemns Israel's persistence in its entrenched culture of ensuring impunity. The UN Special Committee tasked with investigating Israel's human rights violations also criticized the protracted occupation of Palestinian lands by the regime. The committee denounced Israel for the use of excessive force against Palestinians. It also said the regime forces killed 60 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank only in the first half of 2022. The committee also pointed to the increase in the settler violence against Palestinians, saying the perpetrators often go unpunished. The report also criticized the regime for its administrative detention of Palestinians, the demolition of their homes, torture, and ill-treatment of detainees. Food and fuel prices have been skyrocketing across the Western world amid a record inflation in some countries, but the U.S. keeps blaming the global crisis on Russia and its military offensive in Ukraine. We further discuss the West blame game in our news review program. The United States says that it will impose harsh consequences on countries that break or abuse what it calls the international economic order. The Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, hinted that Russia is challenging the order by its war in Ukraine. Yellen also said that the U.S. is pushing for increased trade ties with its allies to prevent what she called the manipulation of supply chains in the world. The official also called for a united stance against Russia's military operation in Ukraine. The U.S. accuses Russia of having triggered the current food crisis in the world by preventing Ukraine's key wheat exports. Moscow says it is the U.S. sanctions that have caused the crisis. The U.S. has also failed to form an international coalition for a trade embargo on Russia. Rodney Shakespeare is the professor of economics, joins us from London, and we also have Carol Verjeken, contributor at the Schiller Institute, who joins us from Paris. Welcome to you both. Sorry if I didn't pronounce your last name properly, Carol Verjeken, but let me first start with you. We're looking at statements made from the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. Some appear to be out of her league in terms of the position that she has as a Treasury Secretary. For example, saying that Russia is challenging the order, the world order. What do you think about that statement coming from her, especially given the position that she has?
Well, I think in reality, the U.S. has no more any foreign policy. The only foreign policy they have is sanctions. So the reality is also that the United States and the Treasury Department, by its own behavior, by confiscating the financial assets of Venezuela, of Iran at one point, and then of Afghanistan, and then of Russia, you know, is creating a flight out of the dollar zone. So over the last months, we have seen an increasingly cooperative mood among countries in the Central Europe and in Central Asia and in East Asia, and the increasing role of other currencies as reserve currencies. India is now trading in rupees, Iran also, so yesterday there was an announcement that five major countries of the ASEAN, including Indonesia, Singapore, are going to trade in national currencies and not any creating a complete alternative to the dollar. So the failure of Biden to get a deal on the oil will mean everybody here in Paris, the major French press, is expecting Biden will lose the next midterm election, and that it was a complete failure, the trip, because if the U.S. cannot bring in more oil on the market, either through discussions with Saudi Arabia or opening up for a deal with Iran, there will be no new oil, and then oil will be very expensive, and the impact on the U.S. consumer prices will be terrible, and the chief will prevent any re-election of Biden. So I think there's a lot of panic in Washington, not about Russia, but about the coming fall of Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see here. Rodney Shakespeare, when the Treasury Secretary says that Russia is challenging the order, based on the statements from our guests there from Paris, doesn't it actually reveal the fact the U.S. Is afraid of losing its grip because it may not have that impact that it wants from its sanctions? And again, that's the only thing left in its toolbox. And as our guest there said, it is foreign policy.
Well, yes. Now, Janet Yellen's statement is astonishing. It's mind-boggling. It's gobsmacking, if you will forgive me my language. There is one country which, more than anybody else, is wrecking the international economic order. Your guest mentioned sanctions. Well, where do you start? North Korea, Venezuela, Iran, China, you name it. And that is part of their policy, which is creating a massive inflation, which is starting to bring down governments right the way round this world, and is possibly going to destroy, may even destroy, the social structure of societies in Europe. They're doing this on behalf of a policy which started 25 years ago, the eastward expansion of NATO, made worse in 2014 than 8 years of killing Russian-speaking Ukrainians. They've now got a policy on Ukraine which has completely failed. They're implementing it via sanctions which are completely and utterly failed. And those sanctions on Russia alone are bringing economic disaster on this world. All I can say is that in a weird way, at the back of her mind, the Americans are actually waking up to what they've done and what is happening, which is they have precipitated a massive shift from a unipolar world to a multipolar world. And they are losing the argument. And for them to say that Russia is wrecking the economic organization of the world when they are doing it, frankly, what do I do? Do I laugh or do I cry?
Okay, thank you very much for that, Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics from London, and Carol Rurik-Skin, contributor at the Schiller Institute from Paris. Thank you. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. The European Union approves another 500 million euros to supply arms to Ukraine, taking the bloc's total financial support for Kiev to 2.5 billion euros. There is growing disquiet in the bloc regarding the impact that sanctions against Russia are having on the EU's economy. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
EU foreign affairs ministers held their last scheduled meeting on Monday before taking a six-week summer break. Of course, proceedings were dominated by the war in Ukraine.
Ukraine needs more arms. We will provide them. The war will continue. We'll continue supporting. And that's why I have proposed the next tranche of the European Peace Facility, allocating 500 million more.
Josep Borrell has doubled down on criticism of sanctions against Russia and their impact on EU citizens. He has even written a blog on the subject. It's reported he's doing this because of growing disquiet amongst EU leaders regarding the harm sanctions are causing. Energy and food prices continue to rise in the EU, placing enormous pressure on citizens. Experts warn things could get worse.
We have seen over the last couple of months that there is disparity, there is disunity. There is already an exception for Hungary in terms of energy supply. And my worry is that as soon as the winter sets in, there might be a problem, and then we have to see how long the support for the sanctions will materialise.
Ordinary citizens are asking why we don't hear more about peace negotiations.
The price you pay now is out of control. Gas, oil, electricity, food. It's all gone crazy. We need to end the war.
As the West continues to pump billions of euro and dollars into Ukraine, the country's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is sacking senior officials. Analysts say it shows the country remains corrupt at the highest levels. The European Commission will unveil much-anticipated plans on Wednesday designed to ensure the EU doesn't run out of gas this winter. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
An amber warning for extreme heat issued in the UK. A country with a policy to rapidly reduce climate-damaging greenhouse gas emissions. But, as Said Puruza reports, a combination of a cost-of-living crisis and the need to find a new prime minister is calling into question Britain's commitments to reaching net zero by the year 2050.
The British capital is boiling with July temperatures rarely seen in the country. For some, it's business as usual, a chance to bask in it. For others, a cause for concern.
I would say climate changing. Every year, it's just getting hotter and hotter. In other countries like Dubai and Kuwait, that's 50, 60 degrees. That's normal nowadays.
Basically, we let it go like downhill for like 200 years, for example. And now we just, we're doing something wrong here, you know. But at least the realization is a first step. So hopefully they will take it more serious and start actually doing something.
With temperatures climbing up to 41 degrees Celsius over the next 2 days, the National Meteorological Service has issued its first ever red warning for exceptional heat for much of the country.
Britain is a country where people are used to complaining about the wet weather. Now this scorching heat is going to give them something else to gripe about. But it doesn't stop there. There's real concern about how these rising temperatures will impact the everyday life.
Metro passengers have been urged not to travel by train. Schools are only allowing early pickups after the government said they had to stay open and that people should be resilient enough to enjoy the sunshine. Climate activists are threatening more decisive action to perceived inaction by government and big business, similar to the Extinction Rebellion protest that shut down parts of central London a few years ago. The activists' frustration now confirmed by the UK's climate minister, Alok Sharma, who has accused some of the candidates running for prime minister of being lukewarm on achieving the country's net zero target. And this week, his plea for climate action as he addressed the Petersburg Climate Dialogue in Berlin.
I have to say, and I say this with all sincerity, that many of the commitments that we heard in Glasgow remain just that. They are still just words on a page. And you know, because you can see this around you, all the evidence tells us that time is running out.
Climate scientists say the next decade will be defined by greater weather extremes. But the fear is it'll also be shaped by humanity's collective failure to do more. Saidpur is up, London.
Iran's judiciary spokesman has denounced as scandalous and unfair a Swedish court verdict against Iranian national Hamid Nouri. Masoud Setayeshi says that the trial did not follow legal norms. Setayeshi says witnesses' statements were not checked against facts. He says that Nouri was also denied his own basic rights as a defendant, including the right to summon a witness. Last week, a Swedish court handed a life sentence to the Iranian national. He was arrested in 2019 over allegations of human rights violations against members of the MKO terrorist group. Iran has objected to the verdict against Nouri. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Eid al-Qadir. The emphasis that our magnanimous Imam Khomeini and many other prominent religious scholars have placed on the unity between religion and politics is in fact rooted in Islamic teachings, especially the great lesson that Qadir taught us. This shows the importance of the issue. All the people who interpret Qadir in this way, that is, all Shi'as, and even many non-Shi'a Muslims who have a similar interpretation, many constantly pay attention to the fact that the issue of government is a critical issue, and that it is a high priority in Islam. No one should be indifferent to the issue of government. The important role of governments in guiding or misleading nations is a historical reality. The fact that the Islamic Republic places so much emphasis on the appropriate management of the country in the constitution and elsewhere is all due to the strong emphasis that Islam has placed on this issue. This is a point that must not be ignored.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The fact that the Holy Prophet of Islam introduced Ali ibn Abi Talib as his successor in Ghadir al-Khum is another point that is closely related to the first point. What were the defining characteristics of Imam Ali's life both before and after this event? These characteristics can provide us with a yardstick. Moving on the path of righteousness and attaching great importance to Allah's satisfaction were the primary features of Imam Ali's life. No matter how much hardship and selflessness were required to continue this life, that was the most important feature of Imam Ali's life. From his childhood to the moment he was martyred, the commander of the faithful alayhi salam remained rock solid for the sake of Allah. He made wholehearted efforts and was never frustrated with his efforts for Allah. He tried to promote Islam when it was time to do so. He fought for Islam when it was time to fight. He was patient when patience was required. He assumed the leadership of his society when it was necessary for him to do so.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Gas supplies to Europe have tightened and fuel costs have soared since Russia's conflict with Ukraine in February and subsequent sanctions, leaving countries scrambling to refill storage and diversify supply channels. But despite the heavy costs incurred by their citizens, the Russophobia sentiment by many EU countries, especially those with close ties with the US, continues unabated. The Netherlands, Germany, Poland, and Italy are just some of the European countries who are buyers of Russian oil. But now the EU seems to have imposed sanctions on Moscow without having a plan for life without cheap Russian energy. A clear example of sanctions backfiring would be Germany, which recently reported its first trade deficit in 30 years. While the sanctions on Russia were meant to pressure Moscow in light of its special operation in Ukraine, the backfiring of the EU measures have given birth to disagreements between politicians and the bloc. The Hungarian Prime Minister has said that a failure in rolling back the sanctions on Russia risks the destruction of the European economy. Viktor Orban said European leaders should reconsider their strategy, as sanctions have caused widespread damage to the European economy without weakening Russia or bringing the months-long war closer to any resolution.
Absolutely. I think that the Hungarian leader, Viktor Orban, right now is saying what is meant to be unsaid and unspoken, is that basically the sanctions, this pressure campaign from the European Union against Russia because of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine is having a blowback, as the CIA used to put the term, in that the sanctions are actually working against the European economy. And what Orban was addressing was the fuel crisis that exists right now, compounded with the inflation that we see around the world. We're looking at fuel prices increasing, fuel shortages, and issues with fuel supply and logistics to get that fuel to the European market and to many of the nations. Remember that Hungary is landlocked, so it imports most of its oil via pipeline. And so right now we are witnessing a pretty catastrophic next few months and what some people are predicting to be a very tough winter for Europe.
In 2021, the EU imported around 155 billion cubic meters of natural gas from Russia. The bloc's proposed gas replacements by the end of 2022, which included LNG diversification, renewables, heating efficiency, pipeline diversification, biomethane, solar rooftops, and heat pumps, however, only amount to around 102 BCM annually. The European Commission and member states' efforts to diversify away from Russian fossil fuels were also clearly demonstrated in a memorandum of understanding with Egypt and Israel for LNG exports from the East Mediterranean. However, analysts predicted that there could be significant cost implications for Europe as it looks elsewhere for gas supplies. The International Monetary Fund even indicated that escalations to existing sanctions against Russia could cascade into even steeper energy price increases, deteriorating corporate and household sentiment and financial market disruption.
The European leaders don't really care about their people, and they don't really care about peace. They are interested in serving the military-industrial complex. They're interested, as members of the ruling class, in serving the lapdogs, you know, in Washington, in Brussels, in Vienna. And so they don't really care, ultimately, about peace and stability. Ukraine here is like a sacrificial lamb for the European leaders by which to pump in more weapons. Germany is rearming itself. NATO is going to increase its weapons. And we see, not only in Europe now, but everywhere, sanctions affect the poorest people. They affect the population. They don't as necessarily affect the leaders.
Spiraling inflation has been eating into the salaries of lower-income Europeans, and this has triggered protests and strikes across the continent over the rising cost of living. From railway workers to pilots, people from all walks of life dissatisfied with the situation have in one way or another expressed their concerns. Now, farmers in Spain have also joined the mass European protests seen in Italy, Poland, and the Netherlands. The farmers' protests seen in Spain, Poland, and Italy come after strikes in the Netherlands have led to many supermarkets running out of food as the anti-government movement continues. The rising cost of fuel has also been a contributing factor to the protests.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid have reiterated their anti-Iran positions in a joint declaration. The two leaders signed this statement after holding a one-on-one meeting on Thursday morning in occupied territories, on the second day of Biden's four-day tour of West Asia. The statement says that the U.S. will use all elements of national power available to it to deny Iran the ability to arm itself with nuclear weapons. The joint declaration also includes a pledge by Washington to continue U.S. military aid to Israel. Hours after the announcement of the declaration, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi warned of harsh and regrettable responses, saying any interventions of foreign powers in the region only results in crises and destabilization, while describing Iran's military power as a security factor. Observers believe that the unconditional support of the U.S. for Israel as the only regime that openly threatens Iran with military aggression can further embolden Tel Aviv.
I don't think that Biden's visit to the Middle East has really anything to do with the arms sale. I think that essentially he's come first and foremost to try to get the Saudis to push up oil production to try to bring down prices at the gas pumps in the United States as Biden moves toward November 5th midterm elections for Congress and the Senate, where right now he's expected not to do too well. What I think this stems from is Israel's push to try to get the United States thinking somehow that they're going to intimidate Iran, which is ludicrous. That's not going to happen.
U.S. President's visit to the region comes as Washington and Israel have been pushing for an alliance of regional countries against Iran, the so-called Arab NATO. At the heart of such military alliance lies the perceived threat from Iran. Iranian officials have repeatedly denounced the destabilizing activities of Israel as the main source of insecurity in the region, warning regional countries of the perils of allowing the regime to establish a foothold in the region. Regional states and nations will not achieve stability and peace as long as the fake Israeli regime remains the first stop of U.S. President's trips, with the main target being to preserve the regime's security and dominance. The Islamic Republic of Iran considers the security of its neighbors as its own security. Despite the growing relations between Israel and the Persian Gulf countries amid gradual American withdrawal from the region, several observers consider the emergence of a genuine NATO-style alliance unlikely.
You understand how much more powerful Iran has become in the region precisely because of its alliance with China and Russia. And so if you look at the offshoot of this, is that any threat to Iran also becomes a threat to Russia. Now, Israel, people in Tel Aviv, they understand this. They understand that there's been a shift in the balance of power in the region, and this frightens them. The reaction has been the attempt to build some sort of Middle East NATO, and that's not going to fly. It's not going to fly any more than the talk of European unity. That doesn't exist vis-a-vis Russia. It's just a contrived narrative.
A number of controversial questions are being posed by those analyzing Biden's visit and the so-called Arab NATO. The first question is whether the Arab states need such an alliance. Is the existing joint Arab defense framework so useless that it must be replaced by this new regional NATO? Second, the pact expects to be formed against Iran, but there are differing views on Iran's policies in the region. To include Israel, an occupier of Arab lands, in a new framework against Iran would only exacerbate the regional crises. In fact, a number of Arab officials have openly said in the past few days that their countries would not be a part of an alliance against Iran. And last but not least, not every country has normalized relations with Israel to form a common pact.
U.S. President Joe Biden touched down in West Asia. Meanwhile, it has emerged that his administration is considering lifting the ban on the sale of offensive weapons to Saudi Arabia. However, reports say the final decision over the issue is expected to hinge on whether Riyadh makes progress towards ending the war in neighboring Yemen.
This decision, supposedly hinging on whether or not Saudi Arabia makes sufficient political progress towards a negotiated solution with Yemen, as articulated, is in fact absurd. It's completely backwards. Rather than forcing the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to the negotiating table, what it does instead is, of course, fortifies the lethality of the Saudi military, and it also, as well, gives it increased leverage at the bargaining table.
According to media reports, senior Saudi officials pressed their U.S. counterparts to scrap a policy of selling only defensive arms to the Persian Gulf Kingdom in several meetings in Riyadh and Washington in recent months. In February 2021, Biden said he was ending support for Saudi Arabia's offensive operations in Yemen, a policy that included a ban on the sales of offensive weapons. But it was later revealed that U.S. contractors were still maintaining Saudi warplanes that were bombing Yemen.
and the Biden administration approved the sale of air-to-air missiles to Saudi Arabia in November 2021.
Therefore, if the United States actually seeks to end the genocidal war against the people of Yemen, this decision to continue offensive arms sales such as precision-guided munitions to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is the exact opposite of what it should in fact be doing.
That's why one of Biden's main objectives will be to get Riyadh to increase cooperation with Israel. Although full normalization is not expected, Saudi Arabia could take a step in that direction by allowing Israeli flights in its airspace or by quietly increasing military cooperation to counter Iran. While in Israel, talk of military support for the regime was a priority for Biden. At home, any move to rescind restrictions on offensive weapons is sure to draw opposition in Congress, including from Biden's fellow Democrats and opposition Republicans who have been vocal critics of Saudi Arabia. However, the US president is stuck between a rock and a hard place. If it does not yield to providing Saudi Arabia with more weapons, the kingdom may not have an appetite to reset relations with the US at this point in time. Let's not forget, as a presidential candidate, Biden denounced Saudi Arabia as a pariah. Yet, Biden's approach has softened since the start of Ukraine war, which has prompted the United States and other Western countries to appeal to Saudi Arabia to pump more oil to offset the loss of Russian supplies.
Well, you know, due to U.S.-sponsored sanctions on some of the world's largest oil producers, Iran, Venezuela, and Russia, President Biden is facing a crisis that is largely of his own making and that of the United States. Therefore, he comes to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia essentially as a supplicant with his hand outstretched to plead for increased oil production. President Biden, unfortunately, does not have any vision or plan for the Middle East.
The Saudi regime is considered one of the most despotic regimes in the West Asia region, which routinely violates the rights of dissidents. It has engaged in a brutal war against Yemen, which has killed thousands of people, including countless women and children.
U.S. President Joe Biden visited Israel to once again express Washington's unconditional support for the Israeli regime. This is his first trip to the region since taking office. Biden's visit to Israel follows the collapse of a coalition-led regime headed by Naftali Bennett. Biden opened his visit by offering anxious Israeli leaders strong reassurances of his determination to stop Iran's nuclear energy program, saying he'd be willing to use force as a last resort. He said it would not remove Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps from the U.S. list of so-called terrorist organizations, even if that meant wrecking the Iranian nuclear deal for good. Biden and Israel's Prime Minister Lapid have signed a so-called security declaration affirming their united front against Iran.
So I would not qualify this joint declaration as anything but some kind of posturing. Joe Biden, as any U.S. president before him since 1967, has basically been beholden to Zionist interest, and he cannot hold any kind of discourse which deviate from this notion that Israeli national interest and U.S. national interest are one and the same.
Biden made reviving the Iran nuclear deal, brokered by Barack Obama in 2015 and abandoned by Donald Trump in 2018, a key priority as he entered office. Biden said Trump made a gigantic mistake by withdrawing the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal. But talks for the U.S. to re-enter the deal have stalled as Biden has stuck to his predecessor's tactics, piling up on the sanctions and refraining from giving guarantees that Washington would not abandon the deal again.
Despite all measures of good faith and all efforts and all kind of flexibility from the Republic, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the United States under Joe Biden has not only maintained the maximum pressure doctrine sanction regime installed by Trump, but has failed to lift the sanctions that were the object of negotiation back in 2015, and should I say, has gone out of its way to show really bad intent in the context of the negotiation.
Joe Biden has vowed to boost Washington's military support for Tel Aviv. Iran says U.S. President Joe Biden's visit to the Middle East will not bring security for the occupying regime. President Ebrahim Raisi said if the visits by American officials to the region are intended to reinforce the Zionist regime's position and provide impetus to the normalization process, the efforts are bound to fail. Tehran has also slammed the U.S. for keeping up unconditional support for Israel. Biden is also following up on Washington's agenda of enabling normalization between Arab states and Israel, which is aimed at pushing the Palestinian cause to the sidelines. Upon disembarking from U.S. Air Force One, which arrived at Ben Gurion Airport, Biden said he did not think a Palestinian state was likely to happen in the near future. Just as Biden was visiting Israel, the regime's military bulldozers began plowing lands belonging to four Palestinian villages between Ramallah and Nablus. Israeli settlements in the West Bank, which house more than 600,000 settlers, are viewed by Palestinians as a major obstacle to their future state and lasting peace between Jews and Palestinians. Israeli rights group B'Tselem says the U.S. government should be held accountable for the Israeli regime's violations. Leader of Lebanon's resistance movement, Seyed Hassan Nasrallah, said a lot of hope and illusions are built around this visit. But the United States of today is not the same as it was in 2003 and 2006. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas stated that Biden's remark upon arrival in Tel Aviv emphasizes support for the Israeli regime.
The Israeli, on the other hand, are desperate to enroll Arab states, and Saudi Arabia is the master prize, which is why we've seen all this courtship going on. Mostly on at the behest of Tel Aviv, trying to lure the crown prince to sign some kind of alliance. And in this respect, this joint declaration, as Joe Biden sets out to visit the officially the GCC, but let's not make any mistake about it, to meet Mohammed bin Salman on the sideline of this forum, is aimed at trying to tell him that his interest, his security interest, lies with Tel Aviv. This remains to be seen.
It's now widely believed that Biden's much-hyped visit to Israel and Saudi Arabia is doomed to fail and will not bring any substantial change to the realities of the region.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام البخل عار والجبن منقصة والفقر يخرس الفطن عن حجته والمقل غريب في بلدته. Thank you.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Miserliness is shame. Cowardice is a defect. Poverty disables an intelligent man from arguing his case, and a destitute person is a stranger in his hometown."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. In the beautiful discussions, when we see the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that there are certain discussions by His Eminence Imam Ali where he talks about certain qualities and he talks about certain attributes of individuals that are dangerous, individuals that cannot be relied upon, individuals that cannot be trusted when it comes to positions of power, whether they are political or spiritual. In one of our programs, we talked about an individual who exploits religion for worldly gains, and how Imam Ali alayhi salam explains that this kind of an individual, of course, is an individual who will bring about destruction, and calamity and problems for the society and, of course, for themselves. Now, we find that on one hand, Imam Ali alayhi salam's personality, of course, was 180 degrees the opposite of these kind of negative individuals. He himself was this beautiful, comprehensive leader, this beautiful, universal personality in which the Muslims were going to reach a peak of knowledge and a peak in the economy and political affairs and military affairs and wisdom and knowledge as well. We find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he talks about another type of an individual that cannot be relied upon, and another kind of individual who is a danger not only to themselves but to society in general. And so here Imam Ali alayhi salam says that this quality of this individual is that they are obedient to the people of truth, and they are obedient to the hearers of truth, those who listen to the truth, but there is no intelligence in their bosom. There is no intelligence in their heart and in their minds. And these kind of individuals, at the first appearance of doubt, they begin to entertain misgivings in their heart. And so these descriptions of the kind of an individual who is a danger to society, most especially when they are in positions of power, whether political or spiritual, are those who, they're obedient to those who listen to the truth. They are obedient to, for example, the Ahlul Bayt and the Messenger of Allah, and they are obedient to the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, but there's no intelligence in them. And so an individual who has no intelligence but can very well be obedient to the Ahlul Bayt is in fact a danger to themselves and to society. And why? Then Imam Ali follows up and he says that this kind of personality, this kind of persona, when doubt appears, then they begin to entertain misgivings in their heart. They begin to doubt themselves, of course, because they have no intelligence. If they had this kind of intelligence and acumen and wisdom, then they would be able to take themselves out of doubt and towards certainty. A very comprehensive lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
<音楽><音楽>
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك.
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits his supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. The subject of imama has been a matter of discussion between Muslim scholars for centuries and continues until today. One of the core central beliefs in the school of Ahl al-Bayt is indeed divine appointment of individuals chosen by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to lead mankind, both in the matters of this world as well as attaining the best in the hereafter. This book is called Al-Alfayn fi Imamat Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali, translated as 2000 Proofs for the Imama of the Commander of the Faithful, Ali, peace be upon him, and is written by the great Shia scholar of the 14th century Gregorian, Allama Jamaluddin al-Hasan ibn Yusuf al-Mutahhar, also known as Al-Allama al-Hilli. Now, many have heard of this specially talented and gifted scholar who has many